I met this 6-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face and the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes. I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up, because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
This week is all scary all the time on the Cut Print Film Podcast, episode 34.
Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Wait, what was that? Did you guys hear something? Uh-oh, it's the Cut Print Film Podcast, episode 34.
Episode 666.
That seems like you're jumping ahead.
Am I? And if you double 34, you know what it makes?
No.
68.
Oh,
episode 10/31.
Hey, what are we doing?
I'm your host, Mummy Costel.
I'm Dracula Rollins.
I wanted to be Dracula.
You can be Dracula.
I'm
too.
Wolfman Evangelista / Dracula.
And this is our spooky episode.
That's right.
It's a two-parter.
Yeah, this is part one of the Spooktacular Spookfest.
We have so much spooky stuff, we couldn't fit it into one episode.
We're all wearing costumes.
That's right. We're all dressed like Dave. Even
if you watch American Horror Story, it's like...
Can you get
down to the store and give me a Halloween costume?
Sure.
Give me one of them ghost costumes.
I'm actually wearing the skin of my neighbor.
Oh.
I was wondering why you were so dark.
He's a very tan Cuban gentleman.
So what's up, guys?
I don't know. You tell us, Dave. It's your show. We're just here.
Yeah. Have you guys been to the spooky Philadelphia Film Fest?
I have.
Yes. Yes, we all have. Well, you haven't yet.
Yeah. You're fired.
Yeah.
Well, I saw The Guest there.
Did you?
No.
Oh.
I watched it at my house.
Yeah, me too.
the film festival started October 16th, and it runs to October
26th.
And it's really, really cool how great of a turnout they're getting.
Right.
I was shocked. I went into the middle of the day to see a French film.
Was that Breathe?
Yeah, it was a film called Breathe, which was really good.
Was that Brie about the cheese?
No, but that's a delicious cheese.
Sorry.
No. But yeah, it was a packed, well, not packed. I'd say there's about 60 people there in the middle of the day to see a French film, and that's pretty good. But I also went Friday night to see a movie, and that was packed. And I mean packed.
These people should get jobs. I don't know. That's all I'm going to say. Just get jobs. Can't you stop going to the movies, get jobs?
Yeah.
Friday night jobs?
It might have been Saturday night, but that was Force Majeure.
Right.
Ooh.
Yeah, and
Which was good.
That was amazing. And I went in with my wife, and it was pitch black because the movie had just started, so the screen was black. And I've never seen a theater that dark before, so we waited. And as soon as the screen lit up, I looked around. I've never seen a theater that big for a movie that packed. It was incredible. Yeah.
It would have been better if... As soon as the screen lit up, the theater was filled with ventriloquist dummies.
And then the door locked.
Yeah. And they all turned their head at you at once. You hear that creaking wood sound.
And you realize you were living inside of a pinball machine.
So
did you get shitty seats because of that?
Actually, it was at the Ritz East, and there are no shitty seats at the Ritz East.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Because they push them back far enough so that you are not... Craning your neck at a 90-degree angle adjacent to the back of your seat.
That's a good theater. Although, let me just say, I would never show up to a film so late like that. And let me just say that when people show up late for screenings I'm at, I'm like, look at this asshole. So if I had been there and seen you and your wife come in, I would have been like, look at these assholes coming in. Like,
so would I.
I would have turned to the ventriloquist dummy next to me and said, can you believe these assholes?
I never get to screenings that late, and... I'm normally so early. I watched the great, fantastic pre-show about four times.
Yeah, me too.
Because I love Coca-Cola.
Yeah. I usually get to a theater a half hour before it starts, which is insane.
Yeah, it is
insane. You shouldn't get that early.
I do that too.
Right.
But yeah, I literally pulled it, well, not literally, but figuratively, pulled into my parking spot on two wheels because I knew we were running late. Away.
Your feet were at the bottom like the Flintstones car.
And I had my pregnant wife sprinting through Philadelphia so we could watch a goddamn movie.
But it ended up being good, so it was worth it.
One of the best movies I've seen all year.
Wow.
It was fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah. I saw Housebound, which was not that great, so I don't have, like, a good story about Housebound.
But it is spooky.
It's not bad. It's more funny than scary, so, like, I was expecting it to be sort of, like, balanced, like, funny and scary, but it's more of a comedy.
Hmm.
It's a lot like The Frighteners with
That's
Michael J. Fox.
That's what I read. Right? I did read that.
And I like The Frighteners, but it's also sort of like, I don't know, maybe I just wasn't in that sort of mood. I wasn't in the Frighteners mood when I watched this.
Are either of the Buseys in Housebound?
Yeah, they're both in it.
Oh, good.
One plays him when he's younger, and then one is the older one.
Is Dr. House in it?
Yeah. No. That's what it's about. It's the spinoff.
Is Jennifer Tilly from the film Bound in it?
No.
Oh.
You guys are saying title. Yeah, he is in it.
Good.
He narrates the film.
Is there any film you're really looking forward to, or did you blow your load with Force Major?
Force Majeure was the film I was really, really looking forward to. I still have some screenings coming up. But that was the one for me.
Right.
You go.
I would say It Follows is I'm really.
Oh, yeah.
Because everyone is talking about this movie, so I'm excited for this. So I'll be seeing that. I think it's either Friday or Sunday. Friday I'm seeing it. So.
It probably would have been The Guest, but like you said, we've seen that already. So.
Yeah, Steve was asking me about spooky movies last night. I was like, you got to see It Follows because it's. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but.
Everyone
out of TIFF was like, wow, that was an actually scary movie.
And I'm starring the actress from The Guest.
Yeah, the girl from The Guest is in It Follows.
She's guest starring.
Yes. No, I think she's just starring.
I'm seeing...
I won't have any of that wordplay. I'm putting a pin in it.
I can't wait to see Winter Sleep, which one.
Are you seeing that one? Okay.
I'm seeing it on Saturday. So
I was
going to
see it, but... Well, I guess you have the badge that
you
day.
You
so.
Could come with me.
No,
we can hold hands.
Who am I?
I'm going by myself, so.
I was hoping to get into the Birdman screening, but our press pass doesn't get us into that for some reason.
No, it doesn't.
So,
you have to pay $40 to get into that, so no
and it's
thank
sold
you.
Out, so no, that didn't happen.
But yeah, it is an awesome film festival, and like I was saying, the turnout is awesome.
Right.
It is there's a line down. I mean, if you don't have a badge, there's a line.
Right.
But if you already purchased your tickets or you do have a badge, you just walk right in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
Oh.
Unless you're buying tickets at the door, there's no line.
Did you walk in spinning the badge on your finger
like
the Harlem Globetrotters?
I actually rode a motorcycle into the theater.
Honk, honk. Out of the way, commoners.
Sir, do you have a motorcycle badge for that? I've been trying to convince people to go.
Right.
Just because I was worried the turnout wouldn't be too stellar. But
it's
that's
fantastic.
Awesome that people are showing up.
And the ticket prices, if you don't have a badge, they're sold out, obviously. But the ticket prices are normal.
Yeah, they're not astronomical. Or
I think for the horror showcases at night, the ticket prices are literally $6.66.
They are, because it's terrifying.
And for regular...
Sure they aren't 68 cents?
I think you missed the what they were going for there, Dave. For regular films, I think it's $12. And then there's a bunch of free movies, too. I went to a movie today, Glass Chin, which was... about worth what I paid to go into it, but it was a free film, and they're playing that movie Mudbloods. It's a documentary about people that actually play Quidditch.
Oh, nerds!
Yes,
you mean.
A bunch of hammerheads running around a soccer field on brooms. But that was free, and these films will be screened again. It's not just if you miss it, you still get one to two more chances to see it.
And if you're a member of the Philly Film Society, as I am, you actually get discounts on a lot of these movies. And that you don't get much else, but yeah.
And if you're not into like deep into cinema, there are some pretty big movies playing. Like Big Hero 6 is playing early.
They had Birdman. Imitation
Game played on Saturday, which also sold out. So featuring Benedict Cumberbatch.
I thought there was another major release, but I guess
Transformers Dark of the Moon, I believe, is playing. Not the most recent one, but the one before that they're playing.
Oh, Capote, that's what it is.
Well, that is playing, but that says they're what do they call that?
Capote.
They're
get into the Capote, get me a hoagie.
Did it slip through my accent?
Yeah,
oh god,
the Philly Capote came
Capote.
Out. Capote.
That was intentional.
Yeah, we're fortunate to live in a not a major market, but a secondary market, so that we have a film festival this.
We're not as big as New York or LA, but we're almost there.
Or even Chicago. Right. I'd put Chicago above us, but yeah. I mean, this is a pretty major film festival.
I was shocked at the amount of, like, I was expecting, I won't say dog shit, but I was expecting mostly movies I had never friggin' heard of.
So did I.
But, like, they got a lot of good stuff for this film festival.
Yeah, it's I don't know the exact number, but it's got to be over 100 films.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember the number, but I don't remember it.
I believe it
was not helpful at all.
It was 666 films.
Oh, my goodness. How terrifying.
Ooh. That would be so many movies.
In a span of a week.
Yes. Well, it's pretty impressive for being, like you said, a secondary film festival. And it doesn't even really have to do with the markets. There's just, like, the famous film festivals and then...
Right.
Because I don't think Chicago has, like, a big film festival.
Mm.
They just show the Blues Brothers on a constant loop at their film festival.
The Deep Dish Film Festival. Yeah,
that's all that happens.
But yeah, it's pretty well organized. That all the films are shown at the Ritz, the landmark Ritz theaters. There's three of them in Philly.
Right. I think some are at the Roxy as well.
Some of them are at the Roxy on Sansom.
And then those big guys are at the Prince.
Yeah, the big ones are at the Prince Theater.
Oh, and if you go to the Roxy, bring a hemorrhoid donut because they're seats. Their seats, I believe, are made from the tombs of dead men.
Yeah, so inflate your hemorrhoid donut.
Yeah. It's like a cute little niche theater, but their seats...
It's a fucking iron
throw. Oh, man, they're bad. They're bad seats. So, yeah.
But it is a great theater.
I mean,
the seats are uncomfortable, but they're still not a bad seat there either because they're pushed far toward the back of the theater.
I think I'd be more comfortable just standing at that theater
like
for the whole...
horse.
Yeah, just leaning against the
hey,
wall.
Hey, who let that horse in there? just a film critic.
Eating oats out of a bag as I watch the film.
The Roxy is actually better to sit in the front row, so when you go to like the critic screenings, everyone's just packed in at the front. Yeah, it's very bizarre.
You put your feet up on lowly serfs.
All right. Well,
so yeah, that's the Philadelphia Film Festival, and like I said, the dates for that are October 16th to Sunday, October 26th, so definitely get out there.
And we'll be having coverage of the films we see there all week at cutprintfilm.com.
Ah, that's right. Isn't that our website?
I think so. I hope so, or else we're in trouble.
We've been wasting a lot of time and energy.
What's a website?
Ah. Well, why don't you hit pause and I'll explain.
It's like a PowerPoint presentation, but with more pictures.
Do you have like a little production for the Philadelphia Film Festival?
No,
like
I don't.
Philadelphia Film Festival.
City of brotherly love.
Cheesesteaks.
That's about it.
Liberty Bell. All right.
Yeah, we'll play that next week when we talk about the films.
Incessantly.
There should be like a Philly pit. Like they just play Blowout and Rocky and just all these Philly movies.
Yeah, they should. Philadelphia.
All the Rocky movies.
All the Rocky. Yeah.
Especially Rocky IV with a robot.
That's that Bop 'em Sock 'em's, that movie.
Yeah. Real Steel, is that what you're talking about?
That's not even the real name of the game.
Nope.
But anyway, Bop 'em Sock 'em's, everyone.
All right, well, don't we have something going on around here?
Yeah, we're...
Let me see if I can find it.
We're about to round up our director series.
Oh, I thought you meant our Russian roulette game we play.
Our suicide pact. It's time to finalize it.
After that last joke, I see no other option.
Yeah, we're going to wrap up our Roman Polanski director series with his 1968 film Rosemary's Baby. But first, let me just play this for everybody.
Director series. Not this again.
Don't interrupt. That's it. I think that's enough. They've heard enough.
I like that level-headed Jeff. Where's he when I need him? To not play that.
Well, I knew he was coming, so I figured I'd...
Oh, okay.
Plus, I wanted to hear my own voice.
I was wondering why you were smiling from cheek to cheek.
Like a Cheshire cat.
All right, so Roman Polanski in 1968 made a little film called Rosemary's Baby.
Yes, he did.
Yes.
That's about it. That's all we got on it.
Yeah, we didn't actually watch it. Can anyone tell us what it's about?
Rosemary's Baby is one of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah.
I actually think that it's about as close to a perfect film as you're going to get.
It's very good. This is a movie. I've seen this movie at least a dozen times, but in rewatching it, for the show, I don't know if it's because I'm just so more in tune with watching stuff for criticism now, but I was picking up all this shit I never picked up before. And it was like kind of blowing my mind. I was like, how did I not notice this before?
Yeah, it's a great technical film. It's a great film for the performances. It looks amazing. Right. It sounds amazing. It's creepy as all hell.
It's one of those great horror movies that doesn't need to show you a bunch of shit to scare you. It's psychological.
It's also, which we've discussed, Polanski is somehow a master at this. He does it every single time.
He's great at this, and he's great at really creepy dream sequences. Man, Ooh. Does he excel at that.
I feel like this film doesn't get enough recognition for its technical prowess.
Probably not, because everybody's hung up on the satanic themes
right,
of
the
it.
The twist.
And the fact that Polanski and Mia Farrow are both associated with...
Some weirdness.
Her with Woody Allen right. and him with his escapades, as I'll call them.
His escapades with Woody Allen.
And didn't... Did Space Odyssey come out the same year? I think that was 68, right?
2010, the year we made Contact. That one?
No, not the sequel.
That
the
came
first
out in 2010, I believe.
But it did come out in 1968 is when it came out. Yeah.
Yeah, so that might be why too. But while watching Rosemary's Baby again, I was there are some amazing like visuals.
Oh,
that,
absolutely.
That seemed groundbreaking for the time, like those close up of Rosemary's face, like in downtown New York. It's just like. It wasn't a tracking shot, but it's so tight in on her face that
Before we go crazy, should I do a plot synopsis?
Yeah, there once was a lady named Rosemary. Yes.
Can you do a slot synopsis?
What?
I just thought I'd get that out of the way before Dave did it.
I sure can. hold this.
I stole Dave's bit and it shocked him so much he coughed himself to death.
And all his hair stood straight up.
Like a cat. Like a Halloween cat.
All right, so... This came out in 1968, directed by Roman Polanski, starring Mia Farrow.
Dave, calm down over there.
I believe that we have Mia Farrow in studio. Is that what that is? All right. It's Rosemary's Baby stars Mia Farrow, John Cassavetes, Ruth Gordon, and Sydney Blackmer, and a host of other people.
But those four leads are fantastic.
Yes,
all four
are.
Of them are
yes,
very
they
good.
Are.
What was all that? Right. Sydney Blackmer? Is that how you say that?
Sydney Blackmer, yeah.
Okay.
So the plot is waifish Rosemary Woodhouse and her struggling actor husband, Guy, move into the Branford, an old New York City apartment building with an ominous reputation and only elderly residents. Neighbors Roman and Minnie Castavet soon come nosing around to welcome the Woodhouses to the building. Despite Rosemary's reservations about their eccentricity and the weird noises that she keeps hearing, Guy starts spending time with the Castavets. Shortly after, someone's at the door. It must be Rosemary's baby all grown up.
That's the weird noises she hears.
just knocking.
Shortly after Guy lands a plum Broadway role, Minnie starts showing up with homemade chocolate mousse for Rosemary.
I believe Guy was in Nobody Loves an Albatross and Luther.
Yes,
I could
was.
Be wrong, but...
Two wonderful stage productions.
he also does some TV commercial work.
Yes, he does.
Such as a Yamaha.
But, I just remembered, he's also in Nobody Loves an Albatross and Luther.
Oh.
I don't think they tell us that enough in this film.
No, they don't. Where was I?
Nobody Loves an Albatross and Luther,
I believe,
is where you were.
Minnie starts showing up with homemade chocolate mousse for Rosemary. When Rosemary becomes pregnant after a mousse-provoked nightmare of being raped by a beast, the Castavets take a special interest in her welfare.
Also, this nightmare takes place on John F. Kennedy's yacht, I should point out, which is insane and cool.
As the sickened Rosemary becomes increasingly isolated, she begins to suspect that the Castavet circle is not what it seems. The diabolical truth is revealed only after Rosemary gives birth, and the baby is taken away from her, and it is revealed that he is the son of Satan.
Hail Satan! Holy smokes!
With a wonderful line reading by that gentleman in a chair.
I love that they give you no time to process.
Nope.
Hail Satan!
She's like, what's wrong with his eyes? Hail Satan!
God is dead!
So, yeah.
And then, which my favorite part of this whole thing is... After being horrified, she just accepts it and pretty much is like, all right, I'll raise the son of Satan.
Yes, after a woman sticks her tongue out at her.
Oh, what a bitch that woman is.
So we're jumping all the way to the end.
An Asian man takes a picture.
Yes, yeah. there's
the token Asian Satanist.
There's a host of ethnic backgrounds here. There's a Greek gentleman that's just off the plane, apparently.
Yeah, he just shows up. I loved that, like, just the kooky Satanist gang that's just hanging out in this apartment. This is great.
So let's go back to the very beginning, where Rosemary and Guy are checking out this abandoned apartment.
In the Brantford Hotel, which was, they used the Dakota.
And we all know what happened there.
Yeah, John Lennon lived there and also died there.
I didn't know that, and I just got goosebumps.
Ooh.
I'm not kidding.
Well, he was killed by Rosemary's baby, Mark David Chapman.
Open up that cage, put the goose back in it.
This is an oven, Jeff. Oh, we'll be eating this goose.
Pluck those feathers.
You, sir, what day is it?
Actually, let's go back even further, because the opening credits of Rosemary's Baby are played to the sounds of Mia Farrow singing this lullaby that is simply... Well, first of all, it's beautiful, but it's also darkly... It's darkly beautiful. It's chilling. It's a terrifying sound. And
if you were going to sing a lullaby to the Antichrist, it would be this song, I believe.
You don't want
to
sing this to your sweet little boy if he's not the Antichrist.
It would be this, or it would be Rain of Blood by Slayer.
I mean, perhaps if your boy was Gabriel the Archangel, you might sing something different.
What about Dracula?
Yeah. Through the ditches.
Well,
no.
Dave, I was born in the back of a Dracula. It's very rude.
All right.
So, yeah. The film opens with these pink title cards.
Yeah, it's like, oh, what's going on?
Yeah, what kind of movie? I thought this was a horror movie. And it is, but it isn't. And then Rosemary singing, Mia Farrow singing this lullaby over it that's just, it gets to you. It gets to your core there.
Right, and you get these haunting aerial shots of the building in New York.
And then it settles on the Dakota, or the Bramford building.
As they call it in the film.
And then we meet Guy and Rosemary Woodhouse, who are apartment shopping, and they find and fall in love with this apartment that the tenant recently died in.
Yes. And well, she didn't die in the apartment. She died in the hospital, but she very old, and right from the start, just you get the sense that just something is wrong. Like,
well, that
in the hallway, like the floor is like falling apart, and then they go into the apartment and they find a large dresser has been pushed over a closet
secretary.
Door. Yeah, they call it a secretary.
Yeah, it's a large secretary. Her name's Maud.
Yeah, they put secretary at the racehorse has been pushed in front of the door. And and there's like all these, there's a room where she has like a garden in the apartment, and it's all these weird herbs and stuff like that.
And there's a note pinned to the bulletin board that says, I can no longer associate with, and then it ends.
Yeah.
So, and that is like, whoa, what happened to this woman?
Yeah.
Why is all her stuff still in place? Why didn't anybody collect it?
Right.
Then they come back and the apartment's pretty much empty.
Right.
And Guy says, let's make love.
Oh, no, Rosemary says that. Actually.
And we get the least sexy I've ever seen.
Where John Cassavetes spends approximately 25 minutes taking his pants off.
His knickers off.
While he lays on his back.
And he throws his tennis shoes across the room.
And he takes each sock off one at a time.
I kind of like that. I liked how it wasn't played like this sexy. It was like a average, boring people sex.
This is a lived-in relationship.
Yeah.
And you get that sense.
They have sex on the dusty dead lady skin floor.
After they eat dead lady skin. After they eat Chinese food off the floor.
I feel like John Cassavetes doesn't get enough credit for this movie. Because everyone talks about Mia Farrow. They always talk about Ruth Gordon, but he has this really
you just want to take a bite out of his cheek. he's terrible. He's a terrible man.
Yeah, it's like a very it's really like tick based performance. He's always like fidgeting and doing something, and it's just I don't want to call it naturalistic because it's not, because he's always like uncomfortable. But it's just a very like textured performance, and I'm really impressed with his performance in this film.
Yeah, he's always like lurking in the background, like he thinks he's being subtly manipulative, but is being overtly manipulative,
and he's playing an actor, and not only is he an actor on stage, but he has to act in the film for Rosemary.
I absolutely love. Right. I love that aspect of his character. Really love this Guy Woodhouse character.
Yeah, and you can tell he's always on in that sense. He's always acting, and it's. I think about the logistics of that, being an actor, playing an actor who's acting for people in his life is
Is this a Charlie Kaufman
film?
What is this? So, they strike up a relationship with Roman and
Mini
Castavet.
Oh, these people.
And these two more great characters.
They're so good. They're like that old New York theater acting sort of performance.
Yeah, Mini Castavet is played by Ruth Gordon, and she's just throwing all these New Yorkisms at you. Yeah, what do you want? Yeah, we know her. She's dead.
She is unrelenting.
Oh, my God. You're like, lady, would you get out of my apartment?
I would have punched her in the face.
Yeah.
I feel like the reason I feel like this is such a great performance is that any other actress, I'd be like, shut the fuck up. But I couldn't get enough of her performance. It's delightful. Even like, even when you find out she's a Satan, it's still like, oh, she's delightful.
Who plays her in the TV remake?
I don't know.
I believe it's Mrs. Who Gives Two Fucks.
Yeah, we didn't see that, nor will we ever.
And she is equally matched by Sidney Blackmere as Roman, who is... His performance isn't as broad as hers, but it's still a great...
When I was younger...
I liked him in this.
He's great. It's like a creepy...
I love this character.
Yeah.
The Roman Castavet. I love the name. I love the character. Yeah. When I was younger and I first saw Rosemary's Baby, I looked at him
as... You mean the devil?
Yes. I looked at Roman Castavet as the primary antagonist.
Right.
It wasn't until I was a little older that I realized, no, Guy Woodhouse is the...
That it was the women?
He's the true bad guy. Well... Dave's just throwing Miss Andre around.
Dave's Gamergate persona just came out.
It's a thing, I swear.
It's about journalism integrity. Bah, bah, bah. Shut the fuck up, baby man. Anyway.
Well, now that we've got that out of our systems. So I always thought when I was younger that the Roman Castavet character was the prime antagonist. But you know, now I know that Guy Woodhouse is the true evil guy here.
And even that, like, at the end where you find out they're all Satanists,
he's still
so likable, where he's just like, why don't
Roman?
You yeah
oh, oh yeah,
yeah yeah not God, I'm talking about Roman, where at the end he just says, why don't you be a mother? And you sort of like, oh, you're right, I agree with you, Roman.
Yeah, but the inverse is that Guy is still so hateable.
Oh, he's the worst. Yeah, he's the only unredeemable character in the film, which is ironic because it's filled with Satanists.
Yeah, like you see this ending and it's so bad that he's going to go to Hollywood.
Right.
And the Satanists will be like, it almost makes Hollywood look like a worse place than a satanic cult.
So yeah, they strike up a relationship with the Castavets. And then all of a sudden Guy starts, he's always going out. He's going to get an ice cream.
Right.
He's got to go into work. He's just back real quick for lunch.
Well, they go to an initial dinner with the Castavets.
Right.
There's a scene where Rosemary and Minnie, they're doing the dishes, and Guy and Roman are having a conversation. And the way Polanski frames this is perfect, because you just see an open doorway and you just see smoke billowing in from the side. And then that's when Roman initially plants the seed. We don't ever find out what exactly he tells him, but he tells him something. And so Guy and Rosemary, they're coming back from the dinner and they're laughing at how corny these old people are. But in the middle of this, Guy says, I'm going to go back over there tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And Rosemary's like, well, I'm not. And so from there, Guy and Roman and Minnie are just hatching this plan, basically.
Is there any indication in the film that Guy was in league with them before they moved in?
I don't think so.
I don't get that.
Okay.
What I get from it is that he's just a desperate, pathetic guy.
Because he turns fairly quickly.
I think,
unless they bewitched him.
I think it seems quicker because we never actually hear what the hell the Castavets are telling him exactly. So they can.
We also don't have a time frame up until she's pregnant.
Right.
Well, speaking to that effect, some of the scenes in this film feel rushed plot wise.
You think
like,
so?
Like they get too quickly to points and.
Yeah. There's a lot of,
and I don't know if it's just Minnie's energy because it's usually a scene with her, but they rush through plot points fairly quickly.
I feel like that's a case of time passing and us just not seeing it.
I feel like it's intentional with her because the more blunt and rushed she is, the less opportunity Rosemary has to ask questions about what the hell's going on.
That's true, too.
Makes sense.
It's this bulldozer of a performance where Rosemary wants to figure out exactly what her motives are, but she can't because Minnie's always like, monster!
And she's great at it. She is great at being... At putting herself upon somebody,
right,
and not giving you any chance to give her an answer that she doesn't want to hear already.
And there are people in real life who are just like that. Mm-hmm. They just bulldoze right over you, and you have no chance to get a word in.
So, yeah. After that, Rosemary and Guy decide to have a baby.
Right.
And
Guy has it all planned. He's circled dates on the calendar. This is the perfect time to start.
Guy's done his due diligence.
Just like any normal man, just circling on calendar.
You're due Friday. What?
Are you weirdo? Ovulating? With the devil's seed? the Castevets and Guy hatch a plan to, bring forth the son of Satan through Rosemary's surrogate hood. And they have dinner. Guy and Rosemary have dinner, and the doorbell rings, and it's Minnie with two mugs of chocolate mousse.
Right. Or chocolate mouse, as she calls it.
Oh, so endearing. And so the Woodhouses eat it, and Rosemary's drugged. And then she goes on to have a horrific, what she thinks at first is a nightmare, but then she comes to the realization that this isn't a dream. This is really happening, which is a horrifying line delivery.
This is no dream.
And
was that good?
That was perfect. No,
it's uncanny. But, what happens is she tastes something funny in the mousse.
Chalky undertaste.
And Guy, because he wants her to eat it because he knows there's drugs in it, he's all, eat it, what the fuck? And
he's very paternal.
Right, and so she says, can you get me something? And when his back is turned, she pours it into her napkin.
Yeah.
So she doesn't eat it all, and that's why
she gets half poisoned.
And that's why she's not fully drugged, and that's why she's sort of conscious during the devil rape on JFK's yacht.
One of two rapes.
Yes.
Which does Roman Polanski no favors.
No, not at all.
Later in his life.
Yeah, well. Man.
But so Rosemary wakes up the next day after the devil rapes her, and she thinks the guy has raped her, and this is somehow brushed under the carpet as though it's no big deal.
Oh my God.
He goes, it was kind of sexy in a necrophile way, which no one wants to hear.
As far as she knows, she was passed out, and this man had, even though it's her husband,
I almost crawled under the fucking sofa. I was
not
so
okay. But not an okay thing to happen.
He's like, also, I was loaded too.
That's also a time sort of thing, because then it's fine, we're married, but now it's like, oh shit,
And Mia Farrow plays that as though she's bothered by it, but then they just blast through it. They blast past it, and you don't really get any fallout from that. But that's that bothered me.
Oh, yeah.
Just the notion that, it happened.
I think Chris is right that it's a sign of the times.
It certainly is.
There's a lot of that in this movie, just the way everyone in this movie treats her, more or less.
Like an infant?
Yeah.
She's very infantile.
You're a dumb woman, Rosemary. Shut up and have this baby.
Mm-hmm.
She's also all scratched up, and he's like, I forgot to cut my fingernail.
I filed him down this morning. Like, you piece of garbage.
That's the first instance where you turn on Guy, and you're like, fuck this guy.
Fuck Guy.
The other one is where he gets his juicy role on Broadway by serving up the tie of another
the
guy that he was the understudy for to the Castevets,
and this actor goes
bewitch him,
and the actor goes blind, and the actor is voiced by Tony Curtis.
I forgot about that.
He did sound very familiar. All right, we're a half hour in. You want to
let's break for a Kit Kat bar?
We'll have a lot more to say,
because I have a few Kit Kats left over from my trick or treat bag from last year. If you don't mind the worms. It's just 15 minutes of that.
What's so funny?
As Halloween approaches, you have to prepare yourself for what might happen.
More orange sprinkles.
It's a special time of year, and Dunkin' Donuts is dressing up their donuts for the occasion.
And here's the werewolf.
So come to Dunkin' Donuts and get into the spirit of Halloween.
We'd like some Halloween donuts, please.
Oh, of course.
Some say.
every year. But only on that date.
Only on that date.
This isn't worth looking forward to.
Between 4:30 p.m. and 4:35 p.m. Hello, everybody.
Welcome back.
It's the Cut Print Film Podcast.
And this is our special spooktacular episode, volume one.
Yes. It's a mouthful.
That is. Well, I was eating all these gushers beforehand.
Cut Print Film brought to you by Gushers.
Mm.
Do they even make gushers?
Probably
anymore?
Not.
Yeah, they do.
Do they?
Oh, all right. So.
Okay. So we're going to talk a lot about Rosemary's Baby starting right now.
Yeah. Unlike before when we weren't talking about it.
Chris wanted to touch back on the dream.
Right.
Because it is very creepy and reminds me of Macbeth at parts. Like, yeah. Just the way it was filmed.
Yeah, it's got that.
Just fantastic at filming dream sequences.
There's an earlier dream she has where she hears. We didn't talk about the cast of Vets. They have a house guest who kills herself, yeah, or maybe doesn't kill herself.
Yeah.
So basically, they were planning to impregnate her with the devil's seed, and she either couldn't handle it or they had to kill her. Because after Rosemary and Guy, they find the woman's dead body on the street. They go back to her apartment, and Rosemary, while she's falling asleep, hears the Castevets arguing. And you hear Minnie say, "I told you you shouldn't have told her about it. She wouldn't be open-minded." And while Rosemary is falling asleep, she's sort of half awake, half dreaming. And you see a nun, and the nun is moving her lips, but the dialogue is this distant dialogue.
Man, that was really creepy.
From the apartment. And that's so perfect because I've had that same experience when I was in high school. And I fell asleep in a class once, and I was dreaming about something, but the person in the dream was saying what the teacher was saying. Yeah, it was Dracula.
You were dreaming of your own funeral.
Yeah. My name is Abraham Lincoln, by the way.
Yeah, and that was like just some weird memory of Rosemary's where she didn't close the window or something, or she opened the window.
But in the dream, it's men bricking up this window. It's really surreal, yeah, and weird. And one of the workers leans over, and then he's leaning over her in bed. And it's just an unsettling way to film something.
This, yeah, must have freaked people out in 1968.
I watched the original trailer today. And that thing is terrifying.
It's a movie to die for.
Well, yeah, it's that voice, you know, the voice you've heard in every trailer from back then. It is horrifying. And audiences back then that weren't as sophisticated, and I don't mean that as a disparaging remark. I mean that as an educated on type of horror.
They were dummies back then.
That's what I meant. Audiences back then were just showing up to the theater with dunce caps on.
Right, drooling.
Well,
and this would be horrifying to see in a theater.
I remember wasn't there a whole episode of Mad Men built around the release and Rosemary's Baby and all that?
I can't remember. I remember the Planet of the Apes one. I don't remember this one.
I'm pretty sure there was. And going back to that, like, this movie felt like it took place in Mad Men. I don't know if that gives credit to the Mad Men people or what.
I think it takes place in 1965.
I think they say 66, actually. Okay. So that's another thing.
June 28th?
I don't know.
1966?
666.
Actually, she goes to the Time Warner Life Building, which is the building that Sterling Cooper Draper Price is in.
All right, then.
And there's a lot of stuff.
Well, there's your connection.
There's a lot of stuff in the film that's picked from actual stuff in it. There's a whole thing with the Pope visiting Yankee Stadium, and then the Time magazine cover that says, "Is God Dead?" which was a real Time magazine cover, which caused a huge uproar when it came out.
She saw that in the doctor's office. Now, was that Dr. Abraham Saperstein?
I think that was Dr. Charles Grodin.
Yes, Charles Grodin is in this film. He plays a bowl of dry shredded wheat.
Saperstein. How many times are you going to say that?
Like three or four.
Played by Ralph Bellamy.
I didn't like...
You didn't like Saperstein?
Yeah, I don't know why. He annoyed the shit out of me.
I liked him. I thought he was a fine performer.
He was the only Satanist I didn't like not from an acting standpoint, just he seemed like... Of all the Satanists, he seemed like the biggest jerk of all of them.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was.
Well, that's because he goon arms her at the end of the film into the taxi.
Right.
It also... just felt like, how did they get an OBGYN into their satanic cult, the best one in the city?
Yeah. Maybe that's how he got his own practice.
Ooh.
A deal with the devil.
Yeah. Ooh. Just like
Tony Curtis used to be the best OBGYN.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, what's wrong with Dr. Hill? What a fucking asshole.
He's a jerk.
Yeah.
I think that's another sign of the times, though.
Yeah, that is a sign of the times.
This raving woman came in.
This hysterical lady.
Talking about a plot against her, and he said, yeah, right, toots.
Clearly her vagina is making her say crazy things.
I think that's more or less what...
But it seemed like he was understanding until she mentioned Saperstein, which he's like, oh, I don't want to get in a league with the devil.
His beard is insane.
Well, I'm literally dry shredded wheat. I don't want to get milk poured on me. Saperstein's known for his milk pouring. I don't want to get soggy.
Tassin. It smells.
It's Tannis.
Oh, Tannis
root. Tannis root.
Yeah. So
we're Rosemary. Tannis anyone? As she says.
Three serving two. It's a game of Tannis.
Which is an anagram of what?
Satin.
Oh, okay.
Silky material.
Yes, what my pants are made out of. Anyway, back to the dreams. I don't have a lot to say about the dream. It's just I just love the way, just everything about this dream sequence is excellent.
It's remarkable. Yeah, just wearing satin pants. We're hung up on it for a second.
I can't believe you guys never noticed my satin pants. They're so comfortable.
I just thought it was a kilt. So yeah, Polanski is fantastic at filming these fantastic dream sequences. He did it in Macbeth. He does it in Rosemary's Baby twice.
I think the thing that just struck me so much about the dream sequence, and this was the thing I never picked up on before until rewatching it, is that they're on JFK's yacht and JFK is in the dream sequence. I somehow never caught that before.
I didn't either.
But for some reason, when I rewatched it, I noticed there's a scene where she has a friend. The friend's named Hutch. He's this old man who's
he's played by Will Smith, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, God damn it. We had the same joke.
Kevin James shows up, and then he helps him out.
He's put Maurice Evans is the actor's name. And
where did I get Will Smith?
I don't know. You're a weirdo.
Oh, that's Hitch.
Yeah.
Thank you for explaining it to everybody.
Hutch is sort of the one person who believes that something's up, but in the dream, Hutch is standing below the boat, and he's holding a bunch of maps, and it's weird, and Rosemary says, oh, is Hutch going to come with us? And this guy says to her, oh, Catholics only. And I noticed the voice the actor was putting on was this bad Kennedy impression, and I said...
Catholics only.
And that's pretty much what it sounds like, and I thought, is that supposed to be Kennedy? So I Googled... JFK, Rosemary's Baby, and I came up with all this stuff saying that, yes, and in the book they point out explicitly that she's supposed to be on JFK's yacht. And again, this film is set in 66, so it's fairly recent after the assassination, which just makes it extra creepy that she's dreaming about JFK while she's getting raped by
Bobby.
The devil. Yeah. No, it's not.
It could be Bobby. It could be Teddy.
His accent is like the guy on Boardwalk Empire who plays Joe Kennedy. Yeah. It's like really over the top. I just liked her floating on the water.
In the water.
She goes down under the boat, and that kind of brought back that knife in the water.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the other thing. There's a woman who comes down, and she says, oh, is the music too loud? And she was putting on a weird accent, too, because she's supposed to be Jackie Kennedy, which makes it even weirder that Jackie Kennedy's like, oh, I'm about to get raped by the devil.
All right, so you mentioned Knife in the Water, and that there's a lot of isolation themes in that.
Yeah.
And once Rosemary becomes pregnant and starts to sort of catch on to Guy and the Castevets being part of this plot against her.
Cult. All of them witches, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Get out the Scrabble board.
The real horror of this film is the isolation of Rosemary. She's isolated from everyone she knows.
Right.
Nobody will listen to her, and she's sort of a prisoner
in her own situation. The only person who will listen is Hutch, and the witches quickly witch him.
She doesn't even get to see him again.
Right. He's like, oh, I'll look into this, and then he goes into a coma and dies.
Yeah, because Guy... took one of his gloves and served it up to Roman Castevet.
That's how witches do their thing. You take a clothing item, you're done for.
But there's a point in the film where the ambiguity of is this just Rosemary being crazy starts to amplify.
Yeah.
And that almost was more terrifying than the actual...
Because she physically looks unwell. She comes back from Vidal Sassoon, and he's given her Noel Gallagher's haircut from Oasis.
Yeah, it's the Julius Caesar cut, I believe.
But it's like we had only been experiencing everything from Rosemary's point of view at that point, so it's unreliable. And if it had turned out that the baby died and then she went and kidnapped the neighbor's baby that just moved in, like, that could have been even equally as horrifying of a movie.
Right.
Instead of Hail Satan.
Well, that Hail Satan thing, that's I think that's meant to be funny. And there's a lot of funny things in this film.
Absolutely.
A lot of funny things. Ruth Gordon,
she's
hilarious,
she's hysterical
nonstop. Even Roman, because he's just so plainly saying these, like, very outlandish things.
Right.
And Guy's Guy too.
Mm-hmm.
Guy is just a bastard, and like, he has no apologies for it either.
That final scene though is perfect. Like, it feels
it
almost like a Wes Anderson movie in that room.
Yes, it does.
Like,
yes,
everyone's lined up, and
they all have their unique clothing items on.
And there's the Asian guy taking pictures, and it's like, why is he here? Like, just to can we stop that stereotype already?
That ending is a perfect mix of, I don't know, because even...
It's almost like an airplane movie.
It's funny, but it's also subtly disturbing just because she accepts all of this. She's fully on board with raising the devil.
Well, we don't know. She just starts singing, and then, it's over.
Well, she starts rocking the crib, and she seems perfectly okay.
I wonder whatever happened to Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, I hear that was a sequel that no one saw.
Yeah, but what if she rocks it like a hurricane?
Yeah,
and
well...
then he dies?
Well... Let me get out my amp, play a few licks. But yeah, aside from Guy being an absolute, just being the worst, the Rosemary's inability to get anybody to listen to her always bothered me about this film.
Yeah, it's upsetting.
It scares the hell out of me that's going to happen to me one day.
Yeah.
Is that Kafka-esque? Is that what
I would say that, yeah,
is.
Yeah.
Oh, I get a point. The golden star.
Well, now we're going to take it away because you had to point it out.
Yeah, you said, that reminds me, this is totally off track, but when she eats the moose, she's like, do I get a golden star? Because he's being like weirdly paternal through this whole movie.
Throughout the whole thing, he's yelling at her. He's telling her
her book away.
He's not a very good manipulator. I mean, he gets it done, but he's terrible at being subtle about it.
He's like, oh, I threw that away. I threw that book in the garbage.
Yeah, like, the book that your good friend gave you. I just threw it out. I don't know.
And there's a great scene between the two of them where he says, he asks her how she's feeling, and she says, terrible. And he said, why don't you go to a doctor? And she goes, haven't you heard? I'll be better in a few days. Pass. And she's been sick for like 2 months.
Oh, and also in that scene, she says, I'm going back to Dr. Hill. And he says, Guy says, that's not fair to Saperstein, which is like the worst fucking...
I almost put my head through the TV when the first time I saw the movie and he said that. I almost flipped out.
It's not fair.
Which is great because it's invoking what it's supposed to be invoking.
Yeah.
It's making you furious.
Yeah.
But her... Like, are we supposed to believe that the herb drink and later the pills that she takes are impairing her judgment? Because
I'm always fuzzy about the drinks and the herb she's wearing around her neck. I don't understand it.
I mean, it's deliberately vague. The way I always see it is, at first, the drink that Mindy keeps giving her is meant to make her incapacitated because they don't want her. Because Rosemary has other friends, and there's a scene where she has a party with them. And basically, that's what they're trying to avoid, her talking to other people. And when it gets to the point where she's at her wit's end, she's about to go to Dr. Hill, they sort of stop drugging her, and that she sort of starts getting better.
Yeah.
Her
color comes back.
Right.
Yeah, but does she stop drinking the drink at that point? Because then she's eating the cakes.
She keeps drinking the drink, but I feel like at that point, they just keep giving her the drink without whatever that was in it that was incapacitating her in it anymore, because they realize, oh, she's wise to us.
Because I just feel like at certain points any normal person would have run earlier, but maybe it's because we can see things that she can't. Can we see anything that she can't see in the movie?
No.
So
it's we never see Guy meeting with the cast of
Vets. She is in every scene of the film.
Yeah,
there's that beautiful scene. Like, it's my favorite scene in the movie where she's... It's like a one shot of her creeping around the apartment when she finds the door at first, but then Guy comes back into the apartment and the cradle's rocking and she stops it with the butcher knife. It's just like she just reaches out across the doorway and stops it. It's like that would be on that perfect shots Twitter.
Yeah. There's also the scene where she's crossing the street and throws out that charm with the Tannis root in it. And that was shot. She actually just walked into traffic. Polanski told her nobody's going to hit a pregnant woman.
Yeah, yeah. So they didn't plan it. They just walk out in the street.
And, well, it looks real because it is. It looks dangerous.
So what's the deal with her hair getting cut? Like, did they just try the wigs at first? And because they don't look good.
I don't know what that was.
Early
I
in
really
the movie.
Don't know.
Maybe. I think it's in the book because this book, the film is extremely faithful to the book. It's one of the most Ira Levin, who wrote the book, said it's one of the most faithful films he's ever seen based on a book. Basically, this was Polanski's first adaptation of someone else's material, and I don't know if he was just being respectful or he just thought this was how you did it, but he just literally just, it's almost word for word from the book, to the point that clothes people wear, the way rooms look, they're exactly how they are in the book.
And that's incredible.
A lot of filmmakers, when they adapt a book, they'll put their own spin on it. Like, someone in a book who has a beard won't have a beard in a movie, something like that. But Polanski was extremely faithful. So I think that's just a case of the book had it that way, and that's just the way it is. Right. But the
Can
short
you sing that last line for me?
No.
Sing it.
But
just the way it is.
That was the short haircut was basically how Mia Farrow's hair was in the film. So.
And that's what I figured. Maybe she showed up on set the first day and Roman was like, what the fuck? Made her wear a wig. And then because the wigs don't look great in the early part. Like, you
I didn't think they looked that bad. I mean, I don't know.
I was watching the Blu-ray version and you could kind of tell that they were wigs. But then, like, they also just blow through it. Supporting husband Guy gives her some encouraging comments.
Asshole.
God, he's just the worst.
That haircut's the worst mistake you ever made.
Yeah. You can't believe you paid someone for
that. Yeah, Vidal Sassoon.
Yeah, it's Vidal Sassoon. I've been saying that all day.
Who gets a credit in the opening credits? It says
that is hilarious.
Mrs. Farrow's hairstyle by Vidal Sassoon.
Where were we?
We're in my basement right now.
Oh, all
right.
Yeah. Well, I think I need to go to the hospital. I don't know where I'm at.
So Knife in the Water had a lot of Christian symbolism, and this does as well. Mm-hmm. It's almost like reverse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Christian symbolism. Yeah. Her name's Rosemary, and she's the reverse Mary, but she's wearing those like blue frocks the whole movie, dressed essentially exactly like Mary for the later part of the movie, but especially when she goes into the Satan room.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. Just stuff like that. Little things like that were awesome. Did you guys? No, you got nothing on symbolism?
I feel like the whole movie is just.
Yeah, nothing that's not too overt.
Right.
I didn't notice any like little winks or nudges.
The whole thing where she has to figure out the anagram, that was a lot of fun.
I love that.
One thing I think is almost too much, and it's clearly got to be done in a tongue-in-cheek manner, is that at the end when Well, first of all, when the baby is in a crib, which is all in black because it's the evil baby. Yeah. And also there's instead of a mobile hanging above the crib, there's an upside down cross, which is a part of me is like, that's a little too much. But part of me recognizes it's just supposed to be funny.
Yeah, the ending lays it on a little thick. But that like you said, it's supposed to be funny. There's so much humor in this movie, even though it is a horror movie.
Right.
It's
darkly funny. It's a darkly funny ending. Because I guess that makes sense. If you have Devil Baby, you would hang an upside down cross above his crib.
Because the little guy loves it.
I mean, yeah, he loves evil stuff.
I love that there's really no reveal, too. You get the flash of the baby on the screen.
You don't even get the flash of the baby. You get nothing.
No, you don't get anything.
The flash you get
is the demon's
eyes. Those are the devil's eyes. She's flashing back to her rape, and that's the eyes of the devil.
Oh, I thought it was just that she was saying she saw the same eyes.
No.
That's the other iconic line. What have you done to it? What have you done to his eyes, you maniacs? Oh, that just like that sends chills up my spine.
It's perfect because
he has his father's eyes.
Yeah, it's that same.
Hail Satan!
It's that same.
Hail Satan! It's so comfortable.
Hail my pants! It's that same sort of thing that makes the Blair Witch Project work and also pisses people off about the Blair Witch Project is that you never see the witch.
I think that just serves the film so much
because
more.
Nothing they can show you would ever be as disturbing as how you imagine it in your mind. And
I agree.
Just that, what have you done with his eyes line? It just perfectly sets it up in your head because you can imagine any possible scenario what his eyes look like.
Mm-hmm.
I picture one of the critters in there.
No. or the ghoulies coming out of the toilet.
It's a chud, I believe.
They'll get you in the end.
They always do, those ghoulies. Did we really touch on Mia Farrow and how great she is?
How amazing she is in this? No. Yeah. First of all, that is a hell of a performance.
Oh, yeah.
She has those iconic lines, "What have you done to his eyes, you maniacs? This is, and this is no dream. This is really happening." Just those line readings are top notch. But she just evokes this helpless type of vibe to her.
She's clueless, if you were, because.
Well, yeah, there's truly a plot against her, and she...
And just in she's, like, naive. That's the word I'm looking for. She's, because who thinks...
Their husband's acting?
And also, who thinks baby medicine includes fucking milkshakes and cakes? Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure everyone would pick up on that. Like, there's something off about
this.
Well,
Saperstein does do a good job of, you know, cleaning the slate for the cast of Vets. Right. Just waltz right in by saying... Don't read books.
Yeah, you don't need medicine.
Well, he tells her not to read all these books because there's no reason to.
That's a believable thing. That
the way he presents that as just matter of fact, it's like, you know what? That's pretty reasonable.
He's like, no two pregnancies are alike, so don't talk to your friends.
Yeah. And he's like right. I mean, no two pregnancies are alike. So, I mean, it's
unless
not...
you have twins.
Get the hell out.
Dave, why don't you go sit upstairs for the next 20 minutes?
All right, so I have this is a personal question. So Jeff, you're a father to be.
I am.
And this I'm assuming this is the first time you've watched this film since you've become a father to be.
Yes, it is.
So did the film play any differently for you now that you're soon to be a dad?
No.
Wow.
It did not, and I'll tell you why, because just two nights prior I watched a Serbian film with my pregnant wife. So this was like the ice capades compared to that.
Which Serbian film?
A Serbian film.
Yeah, which one?
Which one?
Oh, it's a Serbian film.
Okay.
Keep it going. I don't want this joke to ever end.
Getting away from Rosemary's Baby for 1 second. Don't ever watch a Serbian film. There's nothing to get out of it. It's
garbage.
A worthless pile of shit.
Right.
Back to Rosemary's Baby. No, I didn't get anything different out of it.
Right.
I just...
You wouldn't...
Maybe I did. Maybe I am more horrified by the fact that Guy could behave in such a manner.
Right.
I can't conceive of his behavior.
Because like it's almost like his plan goes off without a hitch. He's like, oh, we can have another baby.
Yeah,
we're
he's
going
trying
to Hollywood.
At the end after she finds out the big reveal. He tells her, we'll move away.
Yeah.
This is great for us. We can have another one.
He thinks she's gonna be A-okay with all
like,
of this.
This guy has. Well, flown the nest.
There's like a clueless line where he's like, they said they wouldn't hurt you and they haven't.
Yeah, he's like, not he hinders it with like, not really. Like, all right, guy, you asshole.
Oh, there's a great shot when Rosemary enters the
Room.
The Satan room where everybody's gathered around.
Satan's parlor.
And a woman screams when she sees Rosemary with a knife.
Right.
And Guy looks at her, stands up, and then collapses back into the chair.
Yeah.
That is a great shot.
And then she
shot.
Says that awesome line to Roman.
Shut up.
She's like, you're not here. You're in Dubrovnik.
Oh, yeah. Because the cast of Vets are supposed to be out of the country.
Right.
I can't hear you. You're not here.
Yeah. It's just like so... I love that scene.
God.
I love this movie.
I do love this movie.
What I love most about that whole ending is... what the hell is that woman's name? The mean Satanist woman. What is her name?
Oh, I forget.
The librarian?
Laura Louise is her name.
Yes, that's it. That's it.
Because she's like, she is the worst.
Well, she's a witch. She has like a black cat on her lap.
She and Saperstein are the two witches I hate the most. Just because like she's a nasty, nasty woman. And
well,
she's
a wizard.
Yeah, I believe he went to Hogwarts.
He's Wiz, if I'm not mistaken. Nobody beats him.
He's the Defense Against the Dark Arts
good electronics
teacher.
There.
But she's just like, get out of here. That's how she talks in this whole movie.
It's weird.
And Roman says, let her rock the baby, you cow. He doesn't actually say that, but that's my interpretation of it. And Laura Louise is like forced to give up the baby, and she sticks her tongue out.
I love
like
that.
Like an infant.
She sticks her tongue out of Rosemary. It's great.
So I sort of just love that Rosemary got the last laugh, as it were, over Laura Louise, the mean Satanist.
That's what you take away?
That's what I get from this movie. Take that, you mean woman.
Boo and hiss.
I just love that despite how naive Rosemary is, and this is all credit to Mia Farrow, you still root for her.
Oh, yeah. Movie.
You're never like,
you're never like,
idiot.
Oh, you dummy.
You feel bad for her.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And when she finally like packs the suitcase up, you're like, oh, yes, finally, you're getting right out of here.
And then
that's the reason that scene with Charles Grodin is all the more like frustrating, because you think, oh, finally, someone on the outside is going to believe her. Yeah. And then he calls literally everyone. they all show up together in a clown car.
And then, well, he went on to adopt that St. Bernard.
Yes. And Clifford, I believe.
Which we all know. That's Martin Short as Clifford.
Okay, so I'm going to end on this note. After this whole Roman Polanski experience, he's almost at the top of my list of directors.
Yeah,
he's
this is giving me
fantastic director.
This is giving me a better appreciation for his work.
And I can't wait to watch the rest of his output.
Even Tess?
I'm going to watch Tess.
Excluding Tess, I'm never going to watch Tess.
But
would you say this is his best film altogether?
Well, I've never seen Tess.
Because he does have some duds. It's not like.
And even though The Pianist, did that win the Academy Award?
It did.
I'm not too crazy about that.
No,
I think it's a good movie.
It's good. It's just. Yeah. And I don't really like The Ninth Gate. I kind of think that.
No, that's not.
I like the concept. I love like cursed items. I love like, oh, this video cassette is haunted. This book is written by the devil. I like that sort of plot, but that movie is goofball city.
Yeah. But all of these early ones, the Knife in the Water, this, Macbeth, Repulsion, right. They're all...
Yeah, Chinatown is fantastic.
One, yeah, they're all just amazing movies.
Right. They're classics is what they are. How can you have so many classics under your belt?
I feel like if his personal life hadn't gone so off the track, I feel like we would have gotten even better stuff for him.
Because do
doors were closed to him after he raped a girl. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so.
Yeah.
But isn't it kind of strange that his wife was actually murdered by a satanic cult? Like,
I don't think strange is the word. I would say unfortunate.
No, but like this was before Sharon Tate was murdered.
Oh yeah,
and that's just so bizarre.
It is. It's incredibly strange. And this might have had a play in the Manson family doing what they did. This movie existing.
Yeah, I remember hearing that they picked the house at random in one of those A&E documentaries, but I'm not sure if that's true.
Yeah, I really don't know.
But to have the elements of that and then the weird date rapey elements that would later come into his life, I mean, this is a weird...
Even the building itself, because there's a part where Roman and... not Roman. Guy and Rosemary, they go to eat dinner with Hutch. And he tells them all about how the building has this cursed history. Yeah. And then later, John Lennon will be murdered at this building. It's just crazy. It's just these weird parallels. It's almost like a cursed film, if you will.
And I don't know, like, maybe this is unfair because we didn't intentionally pick a bad Roman Polanski movie to watch, but he's the only one of the three directors that we've enjoyed all three movies.
Yeah. Well, we could have done that with Cronenberg, too, but I had to be an asshole and pick Existenz.
Jeff had to be mean.
I don't think we could have done it with De Palma.
All three? No, we could have. He has a lot of good movies.
I'm just kidding.
Get out.
Like Ghostbusters 2. That was Brian De Palma, right?
You and I are Ghostbusters 2.
Right,
and
so, yeah.
Jumping back, even just to not go off the rails, but even Mia Farrow in real life, her husband ended up betraying her in some point, just like in this movie. It's insane, the parallels.
There's a lot of parallels to draw off with this movie. And
although I don't think Woody Allen is a Satanist, I'll just put that out there. He could be.
The verdict has not come back yet.
Yeah.
Oh, and the guy's name is Roman Cassavetes.
Get out.
Yeah.
Get out.
Like Roman Polanski.
Right. I'm not even gonna humor him.
Right. Right.
And then John Cassavetes.
Oh.
Look at me. Just boxing out. Box Dave out. All right.
Rosemary.
Somehow he's still going.
What's happening?
All right, so yeah, that's our director series.
Dave, let me put this wild under your tongue. I think you're having a seizure.
Here, bite my belt. That's our director series on Roman Polanski. Next week, we're taking a break from director
Woodhouse,
series.
You said housebound earlier.
We're going to be doing our spooktacular part two next
right.
week.
Right. So. More Halloween stuff.
Very spooky.
So I guess we should do some movie recommendations now.
Yes, we should.
I was watching some movies with Frankenstein, and then Dracula came over. He said, "Can you recommend some movies for me?" And I said, "Why, yes." And then we picked...
Cut Print Film
Movie Picks. It was a graveyard smash.
Hang on, we need a moment to compose ourselves.
What the fuck?
I don't even know what I just heard.
Thanks, everyone.
But I know that I loved it. Oh, my goodness.
It was the monster mash.
Does anybody have a hanky so I can wipe the tears from mine eye?
I recorded that earlier today, and then I listened back to it, and I was weeping from how ridiculous it sounded.
We did the pigs.
Oh, my God.
It was a graveyard smash. Nothing to do with
it.
All right. Who's picking first? I go every week first.
Dave, you go. You never go first. I want to see you go first. I want to see you go wild.
Okay. Doing this one off the cuff.
All right.
I'm going to recommend a movie you guys may have never heard of.
Hold on, Dave. Put these cufflinks on.
He has no cuffs.
This would be John Carpenter's Halloween.
Oh! What's that about?
One of my personal favorite horror movies. Right. Because it's the only horror movie I'll watch.
Wait, really? Is this the one directed by Rob Zombie?
No.
It's Robert Zombie.
So yeah, I emphasize John Carpenter.
I'm glad you did, because the Rob Zombie one is garbage. And to read more about that, go to cutprintfilm.com.
There's a whole feature on it.
I have an article called Garbage Rob Zombie's Halloween.
All right, so why are you recommending Halloween? We've all seen it. We all love it.
This is a film that, and because we're doing spooky recommendations this week, I think.
I'm doing that all the time, even during Christmas time.
I don't think any movie has since, before, after, or ever captured the spirit of creepy Halloween in the way this does. Like, nostalgic Halloween.
I'd say, like, the only other film recently would be The Guest. I think that actually does a really good job, but I'd agree from a pure horror standpoint. I agree too.
The Guest mimics the tone of it, but it is nowhere like near as scary.
Right.
And I wouldn't even say Halloween is that scary of a movie.
There's some scares. There's some jump scares.
For its time, it's kind of terrifying.
And you're going to tell me that a man in the background of a shot with a mask on just staring, standing completely still isn't scary?
Yeah, that's
horrifying.
It's horrifying, but I'm just saying comparatively to what scary wise has come later. It's been amplified, but still that heart of what's at Halloween, which is, I can't even explain it, but that small town, just it's fall.
Right.
And maybe it's because it's supposed to be Haddonfield we're very familiar with that place and you can kind of see how that would be, but I just love it. And I don't know if it's because I don't even know. It's just so original.
It is original.
It's not like just a slasher movie.
I mean, it's the film that gave birth, more or less, to the slasher genre.
That and Black Christmas.
Right. Which I think this is a million times better than Black Christmas.
It is.
Check on the children.
But this isn't a slasher. I would never call Halloween a slasher.
This is more of a strangler film. Yes. Michael Myers strangles more people than he stabs in this film.
And he wears that great disguise where he has the ghost outfit on with glasses.
Oh my god. That fucking scene when you realize it's him. But
I mean, I think a perfect way to realize how good this movie is to watch it back to back with the Rob Zombie one and see how badly he misses the point of this movie. I mean, you can say you like the Rob Zombie one as its own movie, but if you compare it to Halloween, it's a disaster how terribly he misses the point of this film.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not going to ramble about Halloween too much because there is like a cult of people who have devoted right. their life to websites and everything about just that one movie and maybe the second one that starts.
The sixth one's pretty good,
immediately
too.
After. Yeah.
I think that my favorite is Halloween Resurrection with Busta Rhymes.
That's Trick or Treat, motherfucker, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he kicks Michael Myers in the chest.
But the things I like about Halloween are what you were just saying, the idea of him being under that ghost costume in the one scene, and to think, like, there's a scene off camera where he's putting that sheet over his body.
He's putting a ghost disguise on.
And just that, to me, is so psychotic, but you never really get, as much as the film focuses on, like, the psychosis of Michael Myers with, like, Dr. Loomis and all that, it never actually, you never understand him. That's it.
It's a great movie.
I mean, the reason that movie works so well is, on its own, there's no motive. It's just Michael Myers. It's just this unstoppable killing machine. And that's something the sequel sort of degraded with it. They, like, oh, there's a cult of Michael Myers worshippers and all. It ruins it.
I don't know why, but Halloween always reminds me of like a horror version of It's a Wonderful Life. Like the way he
really?
Goes back through the town and there's, you know, the scene where, I'm blanking on the guy from It's a Wonderful Life's name.
Jimmy Stewart.
Not Jimmy Stewart, but the character's name. He goes back to
George Bailey.
Yeah, but he goes back to his old house and it's like abandoned.
Yeah,
right.
And the Myers house is.
Yeah, it's the same. Yeah. Like,
that's a neat parallel.
I've never drawn that. Yeah, that's neat. That's good.
Yeah.
All right. So Halloween's your pick.
Yeah. No, Halloween 2.
Oh.
It starts and his body's not there anymore.
No. You don't ever have to watch that.
And he's in the hospital for some reason. Oh, is that from the Saw films?
Wait, what was that?
He wants to play a game.
That reminds me.
It's a talking puppet.
That reminds me as I'm plugging everything this way and
that.
Do you have
a Saw garbage?
Yeah, well, I have a ongoing retrospective of the entire Saw franchise on cutprintfilm.com.
Nice.
And I think it's been read by point...
Not even a full person.
0.7 people. Half of 7 people read this.
I always check to see how many Saw puppets it got, but I never read it.
You're the worst, Dave.
Dave.
I think Jeff is my only audience.
I love that series.
Thanks, Jeff.
It's excellent.
Okay.
You want to go?
Yeah, I'll go.
All right.
Go home, he means.
Yeah, I am out of here.
Good.
My pick, since this is still Shocktober, is 2000's Shadow of a Vampire.
Mm.
Directed by E. Elias Merhigi. I'm going to guess that's how you say his name.
Irish lad.
Yeah. You nailed it. This film, it's a fictional film about the making of F.W. Murnau's Nosferatu. And Willem Dafoe plays the actor Max Schreck. And I'm sure everyone's familiar, even if they haven't seen it, they're familiar with the look of Nosferatu.
The grotesque vampire.
Right. And so this film posits that Max Schreck wasn't just an actor. He was a real vampire who looked like this.
He was really Count Orlok.
Yeah, and so John Malkovich plays F.W. Murnau making the film. And basically he recruits Max Schreck to be in his vampire movie, and he fully knows that this guy's a vampire.
He goes to Transylvania to get him?
I think it's like Bulgaria. He goes
to do the Transylvania twist.
Yeah. It's no graveyard smash, but it's close. So basically, this film is about Murnau keeps trying to get his film made. Meanwhile, Max Schreck keeps drinking the blood of everyone on set. And so it's sort of a comedy, but it's also oddly dark. And it's a real weirdly poetic movie because there's a lot of jokes, but I'd say the last half hour of the film are just bleak, sort of. The moral of the film is that F.W. Murnau is just this lunatic who will do anything to get his movie made, including just sacrifice people on his crew. And
I've never seen this. It's in my queue. I've been meaning to watch it for years.
It's excellent. It's funny. It's creepy. Willem Dafoe is fantastic as Max Schreck. It's he's believable as just a real vampire, basically. And it's not like a corny sort of movie vampire. He's just this sad, lonely vampire living. Basically, the movie says he's just been living in this castle alone for centuries, and then F.W. Murnau, while scouting locations, just came across him and said, "Be in my movie, real vampire."
That's great.
It's just, it's a neat sort of movie. So
it sounds funny.
It sounds similar to Only Lovers Left Alive. Like,
I guess so, but I would say this is a little, this is a little more serious in its tone. Only Lovers Left Alive
actually sounds good.
I think this is on Netflix. It was last time I checked. So
yeah, I can't remember if it's on Netflix or Hulu, but it's definitely streaming because it's in one of my queues somewhere.
So if you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend this film.
All right.
And what was the film you did?
Shadow of the Vampire. Did I not say the title like a rube? Shadow of the Vampire is the title of the film.
All right. My pick is a horror film, sort of.
Get out of town.
It's more of a thriller.
Oh.
But it fits in with our Shocktober
is
theme.
Is it Thriller?
It is not. That would be ridiculous, and you could fire me from the show if I picked Thriller.
Is it a thriller, or is it more of a creep show?
This is more
is
like
it a chiller?
This is a thriller in Manila, if you will. It's a boxing movie.
But is it a spook-o-rama?
This is a spooktacular film. with no spooks in it at all.
Oh. There's not I'm sure a shock. The audience is loving this.
Yeah, that's it for tonight. yeah, my pick is 1997's film called Cure, not to be confused with The Cure, the 1995 film starring Brad Renfro about a kid with AIDS,
or the band The Cure with Robert Smith.
Yes, this is called Cure. It's from 97. It's a Japanese thriller. Directed by Kiyoshi Kurosawa, who also did Pulse and Tokyo Sonata, and a whole lot of shit I'll never watch because it just sounds miserable.
I've seen Pulse. I haven't
seen it. How was that?
It's all right.
It didn't sound
great. It's your typical J-horror film. Yeah. Where
this is a thriller, not a horror film. It's more in line with the thrillers of the 90s, like Seven,
okay,
or Fallen, more
right,
more closely to Fallen. Even a little bit of Along Came a Spider, where there's a mystery to solve, but this is actually good.
Oh, there's no Ashley Judd in this.
No, she's not showing her cans. There's no cans in this. The plot is goes like this. A wave of gruesome murders is sweeping Tokyo. The only connection is a bloody X carved into the neck of each victim. Ooh. And this X is from ear to clavicle.
Wow.
It's enormous, and it's disgusting looking. In each case, the murderer is found near the victim, so they always find the murderer.
Oh.
And it's always somebody different. Detective Takabe and psychologist Sakuma are called in to figure out the connection, but their investigation goes nowhere. An odd young man is arrested near the scene of the latest murder, and he has a strange effect on everyone who comes in contact with him. And Detective Takabe starts a series of interrogations to determine the man's connections with the killings. It stars this guy named Masato Hajiwara. I'm not sure if I'm even saying that right.
Probably not.
But he plays the killer, and it's this bizarre performance, which is why I'm recommending it. He's just this blank slate, and by blank slate, I mean they ask him a question, and he'll answer it, sort of. And then they'll ask him a related question, and he'll say, "What are you talking about?" Like, they'll say, "Where were you last night?" "I was at a bar." "What bar?" And he'll go, "What bar?" It's really unsettling.
That sounds really interesting.
It's really unsettling.
Jinx, Dave.
it's a really, really good movie. And it, like I said, it looks like a 90s thriller that came out of the U.S., but it's a Japanese thriller.
Is it available anywhere?
You can buy it.
Oh, no.
No, it's not streaming anywhere.
I'm not made of money, Jeff. I work for Cut Print Film.
Is it better than the Mothman Prophecies?
Well, what isn't, I say. You can buy, it's like a $35 DVD you can buy. It's all I can do for you, folks. But yeah.
$30?
Yeah, try and watch it.
Oh, no.
It must be the end of the show.
Vel?
Who's on that organ?
That's Count Robert Loggia, I believe.
Jesus. All right, what do we got coming up next week on the show?
Birdman!
Oh, we're talking about Birdman.
Right, well, Jeff and I will finally get to see it. And
Dave has seen it already. He's been gloating about.
Dave has flown the coop on Birdman. Tweet.
I'm fully prepared for you guys to hate it and make me feel like an asshole.
Yeah, Dave loved the film, and then the Dazzle, which is a site we all love, really did not like Birdman, so we were sort of taken aback by their review.
But most critics seem to love it.
The majority of critics do love Birdman, but the Dazzle review was brutal, where I believe Scott Tobias called the film, the director, a fraud of some kind.
Yeah, and it was a hatchet job of a review I've ever...
He seemed to be reviewing the director rather than the film.
Which is strange because a whole plot point in the movie revolves around a critic who's going to destroy the premiere of the play with a bad review.
How meta.
Yeah. I almost feel like maybe it was a publicity stunt.
Yes, they paid him to hate their movie.
So yeah, we're talking about Birdman next week, and we're just going to be talking about all sorts of spooky things.
Right, we're going to be talking about our favorite Halloween-related entertainment.
That's right.
And what we like to watch on Halloween. Me, I like to watch actual footage from the Jonestown Massacre. I don't know. Am I the only one?
I enjoy watching Roseanne Halloween specials.
Oh, yes.
I watch the 9/11 footage.
That seems very morbid.
That's truly horrifying.
Ghastly, even.
I do love those Roseanne.
They're
fucking
awesome.
Things.
They were great. They went all out. The Roseanne and the Simpsons Halloween specials were always my favorite, just because they were just fun.
Yeah, I tapped out on the Simpsons about 400 years ago.
Yeah, the Simpsons stopped being funny after season 8,000, I believe. But back in the day, man, you couldn't beat them.
So, yeah, we got plugs this week?
Yeah, if you're in the mood for some spooky video games, go to Joystick Jerks the Podcast.
And if you don't have your spooky ears on, Dave just said go to joystickjerks.com.
Right.
I said the podcast.
Oh, the podcast. Yes.
And if you love all sorts of pop culture-y shenanigans and plastic vampire fangs, go to antifanboy.com.
They'll spook your teeth right out of the sockets.
My teeth are frightened. You can also go to our site, cutprintfilm.com.
Please do.
Where we have an endless stream of original content.
I believe we're up to 10 million articles.
Yes. Movie reviews, editorials, interviews, this podcast you're listening to now, movie news. We have it all. We work very, very hard.
Jesus Christ, do we.
Hey, and if you get a chance, why don't you go to iTunes and give this very podcast a good rating.
Right, give it 666 stars.
Oh. Ghoulish rating.
And also, again, I have a book. It's called The House on Creep Street. And it's perfect for Halloween season. So go to Amazon, look
it up. Or Christmas.
It's perfect any day of the year. Yes. Buy a copy every day.
That seems financially catastrophic.
But it'd be great for me. So go to Amazon.com, search The House on Creep Street. It's written under the pseudonym The Blood Brothers. And if you like the book, give it a review on Amazon, because I'd love to read that.
All right, guys. I got to get in my coffin.
All right.
Yeah, we all have to return to our moldy crypts.
Lou's just tearing it up over there.
He is. He is riffing.
Let him go.
This isn't church, Loja.
We'll see you next week.
Pleasant screams.
Wouldn't it be sweet screams?
Yeah, I think you're on to something there.
Shut up.